Good morning, and welcome to Frankly Speaking. During today's program, we'll discuss poetry, writing it, teaching it, publishing it, with our special guest poet, Alfred Korn. I'm Joan Ziemba for George Mason University. Alfred Korn's poetry has appeared in numerous literary journals, as well as The New Yorker, The Nation, and a number of anthologies. Author of three books, Korn is a frequent speaker on university campuses and led a special poetry seminar at George Mason last semester. To interview Mr. Korn today and to discuss his works are Peter Clappert and Marie Wilson Nelson. Peter Clappert, an associate professor in the writing program at GMU, is the author of three volumes of poetry and has published essays and reviews in numerous magazines. With him is Marie Wilson Nelson, assistant professor in the GMU Writing Program and fellow with the Writing Research Center of the Northern Virginia Writing Project. I'll now turn our panel over to Peter Clappert.
Well, Alfred, Marie, we live in a time when certainly more people are writing poetry and probably more people are reading poetry than in any other time in history. At the same time, most of the people, probably most of the people in our audience, don't read poetry and have rather strange notions of what a poem is. Where do those notions come from, and why are there a minority, but a large minority of people seriously interested in poetry today? Alfred?
Certainly, some amount of poetry is taught in grade school and high school. When I was in high school, we had to memorize great swatches of poetry. I'm not sure that's done anymore, but if it isn't, it should be, I think. That's one introduction to poetry that people can have.
Marie, you have an essay you've written called Trusting Poetry to Teach Itself. What's your approach to teaching poetry?
Well, my approach to teaching poetry is that I don't really teach it. But I think it grows out of my own experience, which was that I was an English major and I had almost a master's degree in English before I realized that the way I had been taught didn't really make me a reader of poetry. And I became a reader of poetry when an undergraduate who was several years younger than I was started hanging out at my house reading poetry and bringing stuff he'd discovered and talking poetry. And so we all talked poetry. We didn't talk about anything that didn't connect with us personally. If it didn't connect to me, I didn't read it.
Okay, so people read poetry because it speaks to them. Mm-hmm. Or as Robert Frost said in a preface to his collected poems, it tells us something we didn't know we knew. Alfred, when did you start writing poetry, and why did you stay with it?
Well, I think I wrote little tiny poems when I was in grade school, for no reason that I can name, just that I'd read them and seemed like it was something fun to do, so why not pursue it? And all through high school, probably the same thing. As I said, I memorized a lot of poetry, and I loved it. Oh, it didn't occur to me to think of myself as growing up to be a poet, a published poet, but it was pursuit that I enjoyed for its own sake, and I don't think I really ever thought of it as a profession, a pursuit, something that one might do seriously in that way until after, graduate school, when I was about 25 years old, and I began to try my hand at it seriously, showed what I'd written to friends just to see what they'd say. Mostly that was negative, and that didn't seem to discourage me. I kept at it, and eventually reactions changed. People said, hey, that isn't bad. And one day I said, oh, what the hell, I might as well send something out. And I sent it to a magazine. It was taken, and I think that was encouraging. And, well, the rest, happened naturally.
Well, I think we've established that there are a lot of people out there who write poetry, whether or not they call it poetry, and maybe show it to a few friends, but would like maybe to do it a little bit more seriously. They might think of enrolling in a workshop. There are lots of places, art centers, libraries, adult education classes, where people can get, I hate the word professional in relation to poetry, but they can get professional feedback and get to discuss their work with people who are at about the same level. What happens in that kind of situation? I think it's probably frightening at first to someone enrolling in a workshop for the first time. In your own experience, and we are all teachers, like most poets in our time, we teach to support ourselves, and we probably teach because we love it. But what are the dynamics of a workshop? What kind of atmosphere do you try to create?
I think it very often is unusual or surprising for a new student. The whole creative writing movement itself is pretty new, at least on the scale that we have it today. When I was in college, I took one creative writing course in fiction, not poetry. I don't believe there was a class in poetry writing. Nowadays, nearly every big school has one or more, many, sometimes several, teachers of writing. So it becomes not so unusual for students to consider that as a course, sometimes regular students, sometimes students in the community, just for that one thing. And that must be connected to what we were talking about earlier, why there are more people writing poetry, that there's the opportunity to study doing it. It must be effective. It must be working. How specific classes go, I think that surely varies with each teacher. In my own case, I always like to talk about poetry that has already been written and published, just to give students some models, something to measure themselves against. And then we always talk about some of their own poems. We try to be critical both in saying how the poems might be improved, and if there's something lively and inventive about them, pointing that out as well. You try to keep a balanced atmosphere, not dismissing beginning work nor praising it too highly, because that wouldn't do anybody any good. And I think probably more or less that's what most people do. I don't know. What about you all?
Well, I think that it's important in dealing with student writing to be honest and never to praise anything that is not good. But I find that so many of the students I teach have never had any praise on anything they've written. A little bit of praise, pointing out, I try to look for anything that's strong that I can find in a student's work and show it to them so that they will know what to keep on doing, as well as later helping them find the weaknesses and work on them. But once they get flowing with the writing, once it gets flowing, when they realize that somebody else could be interested in what I have to say, and when they begin to stop fearing the red pencil enough to write honestly so that maybe somebody could be interested in what they're saying, then is the time to start helping them strengthen that and work on the weak point. Usually the student poem, especially among the students that I have taught, I taught in an open admissions college in a freshman program for several years. I've taught in high schools. That usually those students are not already aware of exactly how you go about writing a poem, and that the poetry they write comes out of intensely felt emotion of some sort, which they respond to in sorting it out or releasing it in some way. And that then once it's down on the page, they think it's pretty much finished. And so I have tried to show them what I do in taking a poem from that initially felt impulse to write to getting it to the place where I would let anybody else see it, which sometimes is better than others. But I try to take them through. I try to show them or model for them, perhaps, the kinds of things that you can do. I don't think I can tell a student, this is what you ought to do to your poem. But I can say, this is what I do, and it's an option that's available to a writer. And there are lots of other things other people do that I am not able to do.
And the stumbles are encouraging too, probably.
Yeah, I think so. And they're always horrified when they see my notebooks full of scratched out stuff and 18 pages of draft after draft. They can't believe anybody would do that.
Yeah, my first drafts are horrible. I don't even want to have to reread them. Mm-hmm. And it usually comes as a surprise to a student, because I work 40, 50 drafts before I get a poem where I want it. Comes as a surprise that it could have started like that. A little bit earlier we were talking about people getting together in groups, whether in someone's living room or in an informal workshop or an academic workshop, and beginning to show their work that way. And we also use the word profession with regard to poetry. What is the next step? Alfred, you have some interesting thoughts. I've heard you express them before on the difference between writing and publishing, or the gap between writing and publishing.
Oh, just that as soon as you begin writing, you have an audience of at least one person, and you don't begin publishing, making public, until you show it to someone else. One more person, two more people, three more people. I think that amounts to publishing, even though it isn't being printed. I think for most people, publishing means appearing in a magazine or in a book. But I do think that those are different issues. Writing is valid in itself, I think, even if it's only for number one, even apart from publishing. The reason to publish is to share something that's meant very much to you with a larger circle than yourself. But I certainly think that there's every reason to write even if you don't plan to publish.
Could we maybe say a little bit about how one goes about publishing? If one makes a decision to publish poems in a magazine, which is usually the first step, most book publishers won't consider a poetry manuscript unless at least some of the poems have appeared in magazines. What does one do if one wants to see one's poems in, whether it's a nonprofit magazine or a slick?
Well, I think you should ask someone who seems to know about it, and that tends to be, for students, asking their teacher, is my work good? Does it deserve a wider circle, a larger audience than this class itself? The teacher can then say, perhaps not yet, or perhaps yes, indeed, why don't you try publishing it? And typically, a student who has been encouraged to do that by a teacher will send poems to small magazines. It's always a good idea, isn't it, to look at the small magazines before you send poems to them and make sure that they're publishing poems that aren't so very, very different from your own. Because if the editor's taste is different from your own, then there's not much chance that they're going to accept it. So I think that's one stage in moving toward publication. Mostly, though, you always have to tell beginning poets that you get rejection slips and that that's the rule.
That can almost become a satisfaction of its own. I was at a point one time where I enjoyed adding another rejection slip to the collection.
Collect them, paper a room with them.
C. Michael Curtis, who's now an associate editor of the Atlantic Monthly, when he was a graduate student, had his bathroom wallpapered with rejection slips. You know, we have been we're coming toward the end of the time now, and we've been talking about poetry. We haven't heard any poetry. I'm wondering if I can ask Alfred, to read one of your shorter poems.
All right. November leaves. Morning finds them silver, quite a killing at the tree's expense. And like the delicate milling that seconds the die-cut dial of a dime, the cold has etched each margin with shining rhyme. Small change, but enough for what there is to buy. Those white sail blankets, woolens of the snows, winter tosses down from its vault of sky. Green, copper, silver, time grows on trees and goes.
Yes, Alfred Korn, Marie Wilson Nelson, thank you very much for coming by today to talk to us.
It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University, production coordinator Pat Ping. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Joan Ziemba for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.